And good morning, Kansas City, and welcome to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons, sitting in the host seat today, and that, of course, means it's movie day here. I'm joined by a couple of my fellow critics at the round table here, and we're going to be looking at movies that have opened up over the last month or so at your local Cineplex. And also, we'll be talking about what is going to get you off the couch. What's going to send you into a theater with movies streaming on demand and great home theater setups? Why not just stay home? What do you need to do to get you motivated to go see a movie in a theater? We'll be talking about that, and we want to get your feedback on that at 816-235-2888, or you can tweet us at KCURCST. Once again, I'm Russ Simmons with Fox 4, and I'm joined today by...
This is Loie Lockerbie with the Kansas City Star, KCActive.com, and SuchACritic.com.
And I'm Mike Smith from MediaMikes.com.
And want to thank you both for joining us today. And the big news in as far as local movies in the movie scene this month is the opening of Cinetopia, which is a vast and upscale complex out there at 135th and Knoll at the Prairie Fire Complex. And it's one of those movie theater complexes that really has all the bells and whistles and some really unique amenities, you know, upscale food and new comforts. And we'll be getting into that a little bit in the second half of the show. But it really begs the question, well, you know, what do exhibitors need to do to get you into the theater? What do you need? What's going to motivate you to go to the theater? So one of the things that might motivate you is seeing the big screen spectacle on the big screen where it was meant to be. And one of those big screen spectacles opens today, and we're going to start out talking about X-Men Days of Future Past.
Well, X-Men Days of Future Past is more of a direct sequel to X-Men First Class from a couple of years back. It deals with both the younger and older versions of some of our favorite X-Men characters. It starts out in the future when these terrifying things called Sentinels are hunting down and killing all the mutants. And the mutants decide that the ones who have survived, decide that they can, I'm not going to try to explain all of it, but essentially send Wolverine back in time to stop the assassination of the inventor of the Sentinels, because it backfired and made things even worse. And he has to get the help of the younger versions of Professor X and Magneto, who hate each other and don't want to work together. And he has to stop Mystique, who is the one who commits the murder. And so it goes back and forth a little bit. Most of it does take place in, like, 1973. And it's a very, very cleverly done film. It's funny in a lot of ways. It gets to the heart of that, what makes the X-Men appealing, which is this exploration of difference and persecution and prejudice and whether you should try to fight back or try to assimilate. You know, it gets a little over the top. Magneto, especially at the end, it's like, oh my God, what a show off! But you know, it's great fun. Bryan Singer is back as director. He did the first two X-Men movies and is easily the best person for the job. And you can tell that he understands the characters in a way that some of the other directors really haven't. So I'm going to give it a 4. I really enjoyed it a lot.
Mike?
Well, I thought it was amazing. I never would have thought even 25 years ago that a comic book movie would have 8 Oscar nominees in it. And that's what makes these films so good now, is because they're taking them seriously. And I think Hugh Jackman, as he showed in the last standalone Wolverine film, he's just got that emotional dedication to the project. He's just so invested in it. And the rest of them, James McAvoy, Michael Fassbender, Patrick Stewart, Ian McKellen, I just go down the list. It's almost, I wouldn't say it's believable, but they actually bring you into the film, into the plot, and it's not just a comic book movie anymore. It's a well-made film. I really enjoyed it. I thought the special effects were amazing. And I gave it 5 out of 5.
Wow. Well, you know what? I'm not far apart from either of you, because this, I think, is the movie that – this is what summer blockbusters are meant to be.
Absolutely.
It's fun. It's action-packed. It's got tremendous eye candy. And it even has a story that makes you care about the characters. And when I, something like this out of a alternate universe where you know that the, you know, you got to say, oh, well, surely that the heroes, the people we're rooting for are not going to die. I mean, they wouldn't do that. They have to make more movies. But when they can actually make you tense and make you feel like, wow, something bad is going to happen to these characters I've come to care about, then they've accomplished something that's, I think, very impressive. And that they accomplished in X-Men Days of Future Past. It's also shot through with welcome humor the whole way through. You mentioned, Lloyd, that this was set in 1973, and those of us who are old enough to remember that era will find a lot of things that are very funny about the observations of that time. So I'm in complete agreement. It's a very, very fun movie, and I'm giving it a 4 as well. And since we had 1.5 in there, I'm going to up that to 4.5 total for X-Men Days of Future Past, and that's rated PG-13. So all you Marvel geeks out there, it's been almost a month since you had a Marvel Comics movie. So now
getting
here's your
shakes
chance.
Now.
That's right. You can get your fix.
And as always, stay through the credits.
That's right, because there's a Easter egg. And with all these Marvel films, almost all of them, you'll have an Easter egg. So it'll set up what's coming up. And,
Yep. And
you know, another thing about this film is that, of course, the comic book aficionados are very, very loyal, and they're very demanding. And when a movie does not stick very closely to the comic books, they're often very upset. I wish they had done it this way. Well, I think the overall reaction that I have found from the comic book people that have seen this movie is they really liked it.
Yeah, same here. The people I was talking to, they were sitting behind us that had, you know, familiar with the comics, and they were just couldn't praise it enough.
Right.
Yeah.
And so once again, that's X-Men Days of Future Past, rated PG-13. The number is 816-235-2888. What did you think of X-Men or any of the other films? It did have some late screenings, so perhaps some of you have already seen it. You can chime in and let us know. And let us know, has there been an outstanding film that's come out over the last few weeks that you want to encourage people to see, or if there's a real stinker you want to people to avoid? Just let us know. We had a call from Mark who wanted to ask about Belle, wondering how it is, if we can get to it. Well, we're going to get to it right now. Belle is a period piece based on, of all things, a painting. And it's what's unique about it to me is that it's not only a historical film from an African-American perspective, sort of in the same vein.
British.
Yeah, it is British, but you know, sort of in the vein of 12 Years a Slave or The Butler. However, as you say, from a British point of view, but it's also made, written and directed by African-Americans and also written and directed by African-American women. So this is a female perspective, it's a British perspective, it's an African perspective, and so this is something that I think is very unique in that respect. A young woman named Gugu Mbatha-Raw plays the title character, Belle. She's the half-African, half-British, illegitimate daughter of an aristocrat, and he brings his daughter to live with Lord Mansfield, who at the time was one of the leading barristers in Great Britain. And this is in the late 1700s. And his relationship with this young woman plays a major role in the abolition of slavery in Britain in those days. Of course, this is a romantic period piece, sort of like a Merchant Ivory-style production. But it's beautifully acted, beautifully produced. It's very austere, so it's a little bit slow-moving. You know, if you're looking for action, this is not the movie for you. But it does show how one person's influence can have repercussions far beyond anything that they might have ever expected. And so it's great supporting British cast. You know, Tom Wilkinson, Penelope Milford, Miranda Richardson, all these great British thespians, along with this newcomer, Gugu Mbatha-Raw. And she's just absolutely delightful. And the cast is strong. So I'm going to give it a strong 3.5 for Belle. It is a little slow moving, and that's really the only thing that keeps it from being a breakthrough hit. But it definitely is worth seeing. Let's move on to another big blockbuster, maybe one of those films that you want to see on the big screen, and that's Godzilla. Loi?
Well, as a lifelong Godzilla aficionado, I was a little nervous about this because I remember what Hollywood did to it back in, 98?
98. Mm. I didn't think that was that bad. Roland Emmerich.
It wasn't a Godzilla movie, let's put it that way. It was okay. It's just like an action movie. But the trailers, though, gave me some hope. It's and seeing the movie now, I understand that the people who made it actually are fans. And they modernize it significantly. The special effects are, of course, a million light years from the old Toho stuff. But there are elements of it where you remember, ah, yeah, this is definitely the Godzilla universe. He has the look, the sound that he makes, and certain little visual homages, I guess. There's even a Japanese character, and a large section of it takes place in Japan. In this case, Godzilla has reawakened, and he has two adversaries this time. The adversaries are very computer-generated looking. I wasn't as impressed with them, but the conception of Godzilla is very impressive. And the thing I love about this movie is the sense of scale that you get. You look out a window, and there's a foot that's as tall as a building, you know, and it's all from the ground level perspective. So, you know, you're getting that sense of these overwhelming godlike creatures coming and destroying your city just by turning around and hitting something with a tail. And it actually has a really good cast, too. And you don't really focus on the actors too much with these, but Bryan Cranston is in it. Elizabeth Olsen's in it. Ken Watanabe. There's some really talented people here. I will say that they do spend a little too much time talking, a little too much time focusing on the characters when, you know, none of us is paying $10 to go see that. We're paying to go see monsters trashing things. So they could have got a little more action-oriented. And they did the thing that Pacific Rim did, which is the big boss battle at the end. It takes place in the dark.
Yeah.
Why do they always do this at night? If
better
you're going to have these
effects,
great special effects, I want to see them, you know? And I don't really get why they do that. But
and then the rain. There's got to be rain.
In the rain, yeah. In this case, there wasn't rain in that scene. Oh, I'll give them that. But, yeah, I wish they wouldn't do that. But otherwise, I mean, this movie is just loads of fun. And it rarely slows down. I enjoyed it. And as someone who still has a great fondness for the guys in rubber suits knocking over models, that's saying a lot, really. So I'll give it a 3.5.
You know, I liked the buildup. I realize it took a long time, but if you're going to invest in your characters, then you have to give them time to develop a little bit. Maybe they overdid it, but I thought Bryan Cranston was terrific. He can do no wrong, and he is a character that you completely believe in and invest in, and what happens to him you care about. And if you're going to have any movie that you can invest in emotionally, you've got to have that. And even though it's a monster movie, even though the real reason you're going to see it is to see the buildings get knocked down, and that they do brilliantly. I thought that after the monsters appeared, that the movie kind of slowed down a little bit, frankly. But overall, you know exactly what you're getting. You're going to see giant monsters battling, and they do that superbly as far as the technical aspects are concerned. If you see it on the big screen in one of the local theaters that has all the bells and whistles, then you'll probably be worth your money if this is the kind of movie that you like. So I'm going to give it a 3. And since you said 3.5, Lori, I'll bend it up a little bit between the two of us. And we'll give Godzilla a 3.5. That's rated PG-13, so you can take the kids. You don't have to worry about that unless they're just completely freaked out by giant monsters killing people.
It's pretty dark. You know, it's pretty grim in a lot of places.
We've had a call from Dave who wants to chat about, I think, some of the local amenities. So let's bring Dave into the conversation. Hi, Dave, from Overland Park.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call.
You bet.
I just wanted to say that, you're right, it does take a lot to get me out of my theater room or my 3D TV, which I recently got.
Wow.
I'm very surprised at how much I'm enjoying that. However, if I can make a reservation to go into the theater, which a lot of them allow, and if I can see either a high frame rate or an IMAX action adventure, J.J. Abrams, Spielberg, you know, anything like that, I will definitely make that reservation. I know a lot of them have all the amenities with food and such, and that's fine, but popcorn and a hot dog is generally just fine with me.
So, have you been, perhaps, to the new Cinetopia yet?
You know, I was invited by a friend for their soft opening and could not make it, so I was sad.
Okay.
But I will definitely be taking advantage of all the different screen sizes and things that they have going on there. And we'll really look forward to it. I'm a big fan of AMC as well, but I just really enjoy closing out the world and seeing it on the big screen.
Well, you mentioned the high frame rate. You know, you want that crystal clear image, and it's my understanding that the Cinetopia has a 4K projection, which is four times the pixels of your typical high-def TV. So I have not had an opportunity to see that yet, but I have been to virtually all of the other theaters and seen their big screen, you know, high def offerings, and they're incredibly impressive. If it's the right movie.
Yes, the Hobbit movies were just incredible in the high frame rate, and I know things are slow to adopt, but personally, I find it to be thrilling, and if it's properly done, it's just a very exciting way to see a movie.
And you're willing to spend
what I can do at home.
I'm sorry, excuse me. You're willing to spend that extra dough for those amenities, right?
That's exactly right. It does take a little extra cash, but to do that, I would definitely will make that effort.
Hey, thanks, Dave. Really appreciate your call.
Thanks.
All right, so we're going to pick up where we left off. We just talked about Godzilla rated PG-13, which Loie and I gave a 3.5. And now we're going to chat with Mike about a Disney movie called Million Dollar Arm.
Okay. Million Dollar Arm is based on a true story about an agent that a sports agent has kind of a fading business. And he comes up with the idea to travel over to India and take advantage of their 1.5 billion people to find major league pitchers. He assumes that the people that can throw the cricket ball can also throw a baseball. He gets a backer. They head over there. They find a couple young men that throw about 85, 86 miles an hour. They bring them back. And then they kind of try to assimilate into not only a game that they're not familiar with, but also into a culture they're not familiar with. Going from a small town where everybody knows everybody, coming to California, discovering pizza. They love pizza. Pizza and power bars. That's what he feeds them. And it's just a sweet story. It's the fact that it's a true story. And as a baseball fan, I'd followed it before, so I was familiar with the situation. And it's just, John Hamm, who, I just find very, very entertaining.
Sure.
I love watching him. The two young actors that, portray the ball players, the young man from, Life of Pi, and then, the gentleman that was in Slumdog Millionaire played the older brother. And then there's kind of a comic relief, an actor named Peter Bosch, that is like the only baseball fan in India who is just so – he wants to be a baseball coach. He wants to he wants to learn the game. So he comes over with them as kind of their interpreter and kind of their go-between. And it's it was just – it's very inspirational, as a lot of the Disney sport films are, like The Rookie and Miracle. For a few moments, it kind of went into Jerry Maguire territory. Where, he's so busy trying to court a bigger star that he forgets the ones that got him where he was. But other than that, I really, really enjoyed it. I gave it a 4.5.
Wow, really? That's a very high praise indeed. I like this film, but I can't say that I could go that far. It's packed, jam-packed with sports movie cliches, and it's overlong. It lives and dies, to my way of thinking, on the charisma of John Hamm, and he's got it. So if you're a Mad Men fan, if you like John Hamm, I think you'll like this movie a lot. He carries it on his shoulders and does so, I think, very well. It is a true story, as you said, which makes it that much more interesting. And stick around at the end if you go to see this film, because they have clips of the actual people and a couple of short pieces where you can actually see what's happened to them since the movie concludes. So once again, I'm going to give it a 3, and you give it a 4.5. So we'll average that out to a 4 for Million Dollar Arm rated PG. Sweet natured, but typical Disney product. We had a call from Leslie from North Kansas City, who's curious about the movie Fed Up and the angle they take in that film. And I just wanted to let you know, we have not had the opportunity to see that yet, did not have a screening. However, I know that it is about the food industry and the artificial ingredients that are put in, and also the problems that are caused by the vast amounts of sugar in our diet. So it'll be kind of interesting, maybe a cautionary tale for us to check out. And Mike, I'm going to throw a question to you as well. Someone called in and asked us to explain what high frame rate is that we just discussed. And now you are a former exhibitor, so please explain to us what a high frame rate is.
The high frame rate is basically a film film goes through a projector at 24 frames a second. That's the normal projection speed. What they have now, especially the first Hobbit film, is that Peter Jackson was able to double that. So it was going through the shutter at 48 frames a second. So the, even as clear as things are now with the digital projection, it was just incredibly clear. If there was a piece of dust floating by on the set, you would catch it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's basically what it is. It just kind of doubles the shutter speed going through, but it just gives an incredible clarity, which actually threw me off like the first half hour of the Hobbit, because it was just so clear. It was almost like
And they're actually recording at a higher frame rate.
Yes, yes.
Not just projecting at
a higher
frame rate.
Right, yes. It's also filmed. Yes, also. I'm sorry. Yeah.
Right.
It's also being filmed at that higher frame rate as well. Mm-hmm.
So it's an incredibly clear projection. And one thing that I've really noticed that it's so crisp and clean. You know, there's no pops, no cracks, and all that stuff. And you, as you kind of mentioned out, a floating dust particle is something that will catch your attention. And, you're going to have to be a really skilled filmmaker to make sure that sort of thing doesn't become a distraction, that you can focus with that kind of technology on what's really important in the scene.
Yeah, because it can be disorienting for viewers. You know, we're not used to this.
Right.
And I know it took me a while to get into the high. And I think there are definitely some drawbacks to the higher frame rate.
Some people claim it looks too much like TV video.
You know, the static scenes do. Now, it's great for action scenes and scenes that take place in darkness because it really clarifies them. You don't get the blurring that you get a lot of times with the regular frame rate.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, the more static scenes, the brightly lit scenes, I don't think it looks quite right. I like it when they film at 48 and then project it back at 24. I think that's where you get the clarity without that weird airless quality.
Ah. Okay, join in on the conversation, 816-235-2888. Once again, that's 816-235-2888, or tweet us at KCURCST. You can also send us a note on Facebook. What have you seen that you would recommend, and what do you want to know, and what does it take to get you into the theater? What are some of the amenities that really will draw you and make you want to pay the few extra bucks for that kind of projection? Let's move ahead really quickly and talk about one film that Loie caught for us. It's a harrowing documentary called Hornet's Nest. Loie?
Yeah, this was made by Mike Betcher, who is a well-known war correspondent with CBS. And he and his son, Carlos, who was out on his first mission, were embedded with troops who were in Helmand Province, Afghanistan. And they have these wonderful little portable cameras that can just take them right into the middle of the action. And boy, does it ever. At its best, which is most of the time, you are right there in the midst of these missions to go and find terrorist leaders and, take over the strongholds, find the weapons caches, the things that these guys are trying to do to stabilize Afghanistan as much as possible before the troops are pulled out. And it's also a story about this guy who has not had a great relationship with his son because he was always away being a war correspondent.
Mm.
That part's not quite as effective because it almost feels like it should be a different movie. But when it focuses in on them interviewing the soldiers and going into these – in the middle of firefights, you hear the bullets whizzing right past these guys' heads. It's absolutely extraordinary and intense, and you get – even more respect for the soldiers, because a lot of these guys have been there a while. They're very professional. You know, they know the terrain. They know the people. They know what they're doing, and they're really trying to do some good here. But you also get a lot of respect for war correspondents, because they're not trained soldiers. But they are getting this information out so that the rest of us can see what's really happening there. And it's a very, very effective film. It makes me respect movies like Lone Survivor, which recreated this in a fictional setting. But did it extremely well. It's quite intense and very interesting, and you have a lot of respect for all of these guys by the time it's over. So I'll give it a 4.5.
All right, 4.5 for Hornet's Nest. That's rated R. And we're going to take a short break, and when we return, we'll be giving you a few announcements of what's going on around the area movie-wise, and we'll explore how these new amenities at theaters are making them better, or are they? And we'll get your feedback as well. Central Standard returns in just a moment. And welcome back to Central Standard. I'm Russ Simmons, joined by my fellow film critics, Lori Lockerbie and Michael Smith. We're talking about movies that have opened up over the last month or so, as well as the topic of what it takes to get you out of the house and into the theater. What are the amenities that the local theaters can provide that will motivate you to see the movie where it was meant to be seen instead of in your home theater? We will be taking your calls very shortly, and we have Dennis, who's been waiting very patiently on the line. We'll be getting to you in just a moment. But first, I want to give a few announcements, things that are happening around town. The Europe and Holocaust film series is continuing at the Leawood Theater at 95th and Mission. And the next film they're going to show is Left Luggage, which is from the Netherlands, a 1998 film with Isabella Rossellini. And that's on June 17th at 7 p.m. And this is against a backdrop of Holocaust memories. A liberal Jewish girl becomes nanny to a retarded and strict Jewish young boy and grows fond of him. We'll have more information on this at kcur.org. And at the Tivoli, the 15th annual Kansas City LGBT Film Festival takes place June 12th through July 3rd. Among the films that we'll be showing is quite a lineup. One of them is Matt Shepard is a Friend of Mine, a documentary about the young man seen through the eyes of his friends. The Case Against Eight, which is a behind-the-scenes look at the team that took marriage equality lawsuit to the Supreme Court. And the one that I would really like to see, To Be Takai. A look at the life and late career social media resurgence of actor George Takei, best known as one of the stars of the original Star Trek series. And that once again, that film festival is June 12th through July 3rd. And at the Alamo Drafthouse, they're showing the Dynamic Duos, a month-long salute in June to pals, sidekicks, and partners. And they're going to have quite a lineup of movies, including Butch Cassidy, E.T., Indiana Jones, two Indiana Jones movies, I think, and My Little Chickadee, Tommy Boy.
Oh, my gosh.
And at the Screenland Theaters, they're having a new ongoing series, Friday Night Comedy Classics, which include Frozen Bar and Movie, and Saturday Morning Fabulous Films, which include Brunch and a Movie. And at the Armor, tonight, the X-Men Days of Future Past premiere will include a lot of fun activities, including Bebop, Pop-Up Comic Shop, Days of Future Past cartoons on the big screen, special food and drink pairings, video games, costume contests, character drawings. We'll have this and more information on other things going on and movies around the Kansas City area on our website. That's kcur.org. Once again, welcome back to my fellow film critics, Lori Lockerbie and Michael Smith. And we've had Dennis waiting patiently on the phone to give us maybe a dissenting opinion about one of the films we talked about. Welcome, Dennis.
Am I on?
You are on.
Oh, I heard no click. Okay. Well, I was really perplexed by Godzilla because the 3D just kind of drives me nuts. They have soft focus on the back of people's heads. When you're looking at a person, you know, over someone's shoulder, and then when they pan to the right, to the left, except in special effects shots, but then they're in the scene with the actors, when you normally see that kind of a blur that would happen in normal 2D, it like jitters. It like pops, you know? I don't know if it, I asked my friend who was with me, I said, didn't you just see that, you know, when they would pan from side to side, and the actors would stay, you know, in their focus, but the background would kind of like shudder.
Mm-hmm.
And for me, the 3D is...
Are you talking about...
It's not worth it to me.
Yeah.
I've seen movies that have been, you know, ancient movies and how, you know,
right.
70 years ago that almost look like they're in 3D when they're done on Blu-ray. And I'll recite one, The Robe, which is crap. if you want to see it. But, you know, it was the first CinemaScope movie, and I noticed the first shot with Richard Burton walking down into this gigantic set, it like gave me vertigo. I kept looking at it and looking at it and going, wow, that they must have fallen out of their seats in 1953 when they first saw this. Now, according to Martin Scorsese, at the beginning of the movie, they did. So I'm really flipped out by everybody's, you know, yammering on about how great 3D is. I saw this in extreme screen, you know, premium prices.
Right.
I sat down and said, maybe I'm going to enjoy this. Maybe I'm going to appreciate this. But I saw the size of the screen and the angle we were sitting at, and I thought, this is going to be good. But when it came on, I waited, and I thought, no, it's not going to improve. And I thought the same way about Prometheus, which I have yet to see again, and the second Star Trek Into Darkness. When I saw that, I completely forgot the plot afterward. And then when I got the Blu-ray and brought it home, I thought, wow.
Well, you know what?
Great movie.
Yeah, 3D is not for everyone, and that is certainly true. I've heard plenty of complaints from other people as well, and I appreciate your perspective on that, Dennis. Thanks for your call.
I'm not a huge fan of it most of the time either. I could probably count on one hand the number of movies I've seen where I thought the 3D was really essential to the experience. Most of the time, you know, and people's brains perceive it differently, so sometimes you do get those headaches that come with it and that sort of thing. So I'd recommend Godzilla in 2D, not 3D.
Yeah, and I would love it. I've found in the past that 3D works best with animated films.
Yeah.
I like the Despicable Me films. I think the 3D in those are incredible. But other ones, a lot of them, it's, you know, depth of focus is not really 3D. So.
Gotcha. Yeah. Now, how about The Amazing Spider-Man 2, Michael? Is that worth seeing in 3D?
No.
Is that worth seeing in any D?
It's worth seeing, but it was entertaining. It kind of continues the rebirth of the character from the first film. The one thing that really put me off, and I know he does it in the comic books, but Spider-Man needs to – he seems like the narrator is everything he's doing. Hey, I'm swinging. Hey, I'm doing this. And that kind of got annoying. I thought that Dane DeHaan did a really good job as his friend Harry, who becomes the Green Goblin. I thought Paul Giamatti was wasted.
And so is Mike
Jamie Foxx.
Gosh, what a great actor. And give him that role, please.
It's you know, it's amazing that, you know, with – and we're going back to with the X-Men that had all these Oscar nominees. I mean, here they got Paul Giamatti and Jamie Foxx and didn't know how to use them.
Right.
I gave it, I think it was March. I think it was middle of the road. I think I gave it 2.5 out of 5.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. 2.5 on Amazing Spider-Man 2. Yeah, it has some eye candy, but it doesn't have the heart. And, this is nothing against the cast because I thought the cast was really good, particularly Emma Stone. But what they do with her is kind of sad, too, as anybody who's a comic geek knows what happens to that character. So, but c'est la vie. It's just unlike X-Men, the new X-Men film, Days of Future Past. It doesn't have the heart, and it doesn't make you really feel peril. And if they fail to do that, then this movie's just not going to work. And that was kind of, I think, the case with The Amazing Spider-Man 2, rated PG-13. Let's quickly talk about a couple other movies before we move on to our topic. And one of them that I wanted to cover is a movie called Locke. And this is a movie that's really unique. It has a gimmick, but I think the gimmick really works. Tom Hardy plays a man, and Tom Hardy's probably best known as playing Bane in the Batman movie. He plays a man who's driving on a road trip, and he's talking on a hands-free phone device for an hour and a half or so on this trek. He's the only character on screen. The only other people that you hear from are the people on the other end of the phone. And during this journey, his personal and professional life completely falls apart. And it's him talking on the phone, and that's it. And you think, well, that can't possibly work cinematically. Maybe as a theater piece, you know, you could have a guy sitting in a chair and doing a one-man show, but it couldn't capture visually. But I thought the filmmakers did a brilliant job. This is really beautifully written, and it is excruciating to sit through. I mean, it is really hard to watch this movie because you really do see this guy's world falling apart. And so it's not what I would necessarily call entertaining, but it's absolutely the performance of the year by Tom Hardy, in my opinion. And it's definitely worth your time. It's not cheery. I'll say that. But it's really well made, and I'm giving it a 4 out of 5 stars for Locke, and it's rated R, and the R obviously comes from the language and the subject matter, which is adult. So just bear that in mind as well. Lori, let's talk about another one that you've caught for us. Let's see, which one was that? The other one that you had seen, Chef,
yes.
Which I thought also was delightful.
Yeah, it's a very charming movie. Jon Favreau basically does everything in it, including star, as a guy who's a chef in Los Angeles, and he butts heads one too many times with the owner of the restaurant where he works and a local critic, and he eventually decides that he is going to start a food truck operation. And he ends up driving – he goes to Miami and ends up driving back to Los Angeles with his son and a friend who's also a chef. So it's basically a very sort of loosely structured road movie, and also one that has just exquisite-looking food. It'll make you hungry. It's one of those movies where you're like, oh, because he does Cuban food on this truck, and it's just – there's so much care and love put into it. You can tell that Favreau is a foodie himself. He's got to be. But it, you know, it's a little bit too loosely structured in some ways. It kind of meanders a lot. But it comes back to the interplay between Jon Favreau and John Leguizamo, and I can't remember the name of the actor who plays the son. But they have this wonderful rapport, and it's just like these three amigos traveling across the country. There's no, you know, contrived melodrama or anything like that. It's just a very kind of sweet, funny, occasionally raunchy food lovers comedy. So I'll give it a 3.5.
I think I liked it even better than you did, Loie. The only problem that I have with this film is that it's a perfect movie for families if it weren't rated R.
But if you can get past all the F-bombs and stuff.
Yeah, it's just like, oh, John, I wish you hadn't gone there, because, you know, you could have made this movie without that and had a much broader appeal. But it's still very good. It's very believable. And even though it's a very simple and somewhat cliched, really, storyline, the dialogue is great. And the actors are completely engaging. You also have Sofia Vergara, which I've never seen her in a role I liked her better in than I saw her here.
Yeah, it's much more subdued than if you've just seen her on Modern Family.
Right. And Favreau, he just has a way with making his characters come to life and making their dialogue ring true. And if you're a foodie, you know, this is maybe a must-see for foodies, but I do warn you, you've got to eat before you go to the movie, because
find the nearest Cuban restaurant, because you're going to want to go.
You'll be rushing out to grab some. So you're giving it a 3.5. Well, I'm going to give it a 4. So with your permission, I'm going to bump it up to between us to a 4 for Chef, and that is rated R. I want to bring Kim into the conversation. Kim from Harrisonville has maybe a dissenting opinion about the X-Men film. Welcome aboard, Kim.
Hi, how are you?
I'm well.
I have a teenager who is a self-proclaimed comic book nerd. And her question, when I told her the comment about the other comic book people enjoying the X-Men, she said, well, was it a midnight showing? Because that would make all the difference. She has seen, I believe Wolverine was the one she mentioned. She had seen it at the midnight showing. She says she thought it was great. But then she realized she was just hyped up on sugar and sleep deprived, because when she was on the night period, the movie was horrible. So she refuses to see the new X-Men movie at the theater. She's going to wait and she'd rather be disappointed in her own home than at the theater. So.
Oh, that's too bad.
I think the midnight showings, I mean, man, that can be a real marathon. You're not really at your best at midnight on a Thursday night, usually.
that's kind of what her question was. That's why they liked it so well, because they were also surprised.
Well, I don't know. We were at a press preview screening, and there were a lot of comic book fans there.
A lot of people in costume, too.
Yeah, there were people in costume. Yeah. So, and it was, you know, 7:30 on a Tuesday night. It was a slightly better time physically for most people, I think. But I would say, you know, see if she'll maybe go to a matinee that's a little bit cheaper, because it is worth seeing in a theater.
I'll mention it to her. Thank you.
Thank you, Kim. Thanks for your call. Appreciate it. I want to quickly cover a couple other movies before we move on and talk about these wild and crazy amenities that these theaters are providing to draw us into the movie houses. One is Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return, and that's another one of those 3D animated films, which, you know, Mike was telling us that he thinks 3D works best for animated films. And yeah, the 3D works pretty well in this. I just wish they'd spent as much time on the script as they spent on the 3D and all of the animation. It looks good up on the big screen, but it is totally flat and cliched in most other ways. Lea Michele provides the voice of Dorothy. And this is picks up where the classic 1939 film left off. The only difference is that it's set in modern times. But Dorothy returns to Oz, obviously, because there's a bad guy who's taken over Oz in the time that Dorothy has been gone and causing all kinds of havoc. And the music is by Bryan Adams, which is very generic. And unless, you know, you're a huge Oz fan, I think that this movie would just fall flat for most viewers. So I'm going to give Legends of Oz, Dorothy's Return, a 2.5, simply and only that high because I thought the visuals were good. So let's quickly talk, Mike, about a R-rated comedy that opened back on May 9th. It's called Neighbors.
Neighbors is the story of a young, well, early 30s couple played by Seth Rogen and Rose Byrne and their young infant daughter who have bought the house of their dreams and they're living the lifestyle and the house next door goes up for sale and they're appalled to find that it's been bought by a fraternity. They, of course, ensuing hijinks happen. They do. They try to make friends with them, but they end up having to call the police on them. It's a lot of old school and a lot of Van Wilder. It looks like they just took all the to me, the college films, little Animal House, and just kind of tried to do a mismatch of all the plots. But it just wasn't very funny. I mean, the funniest person in the film was Dave Franco, which is, you know, I know, kind of kind of understanding, you know, harder to believe when you got Seth Rogen in there. I gave it 2.5. It was just marginal.
And I would agree with you, although I didn't think I liked it quite as much as you did. So, but I'll give it a 2.5 as well. It's just a raunch fest, and unless you can tune into that, you know, stoner humor that we know Seth Rogen from, then this is not going to be your cup of tea. 2.5 for Neighbors, rated R, and boy, it earns that R rating. I'll tell you, big time. Let's also talk quickly about another movie that opened up at the art houses called Fading Gigolo.
An excellent film, written and directed by John Turturro. It's being promoted as a Woody Allen film because Woody's in it. I don't know if Turturro just knows Woody really well and wrote for him or he let Woody improv, but it's a classic Woody Allen performance. It's basically about a man who is Woody Allen kind of makes him a gigolo.
It's a fantasy.
Yeah, his psychiatrist is looking for a man. And it's funny, it's sweet. Turturro is excellent. He did a film a few years ago called Sonny. He definitely knows his way behind a camera. I gave it 4.
Wow, you liked it twice as well as I did. I'm giving it a 2 because I thought it was like something that Woody Allen would have written in his sleep. I didn't think that the attempts to pull at our heartstrings worked at all, but I did like the cast, and that's the reason I'm giving it the 2. So between the two of us, we'll rank it as a 3 for Fading Gigolo, rated R. And, Loie, quickly, let us know what Blended is all about.
Blended is the latest pairing of Adam Sandler and Drew Barrymore. They play single parents who have a disastrous blind date, and then through sort of typical movie machinations, they and their children end up sharing lodgings at a very, very fancy safari vacation in South Africa. And, of course, you know, romance and growing and all that sort of thing ensues. And so does plenty of typical Adam Sandler-esque humor. So your tolerance for it will depend a lot on your tolerance for that. I think Drew Barrymore has a good effect on him. She kind of softens him a little bit. And he's very good at working with kids. So that gives it a little bit of tolerability. But I can't give it higher than maybe a 2.5.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I'm maybe not even go that high, but two is probably right. So we'll say 2.5 for blended. It's rated PG-13. My colleague Sean Edwards found it terribly racist, which is really interesting.
Yes.
Part of it takes place in Africa, and it's I can understand that perspective.
Well, the African characters are such – I mean, they're either lazy or these sort of grinning, subservient – yeah, it is offensive in that way, yeah.
Yeah, I would say I don't think it was necessarily racist, but certainly insensitive, yeah. So no question
That's
about that.
That's a nice
that.
Way of putting it.
Yeah. So we'll say 2.5 for blended rated PG-13. Let's talk quickly about some of these new theaters and the amenities. Now, we've all been to an AMC Prime. So, Michael, in your opinion, what is the good thing or bad thing about AMC Prime?
The good thing is the comfortable chairs. The whole aspect of going to a movie theater, and the one reason that I enjoy going to a movie theater is the audience. I like to share the movie experience with the people around me.
Good point.
You know, I can laugh in my living room, but sometimes it's fun to laugh with other people. Things are just getting so expensive these days. And as critics, we're lucky because we don't pay for a lot of the films we see. I'm sure we wouldn't see as many of them as we did if we had to. Basically, everybody has digital projection now, so your picture is fine. You don't have to worry about scratch prints or anything. Basically, I just go to enjoy the experience, whether I'm sitting in a recliner or if I'm sitting in a regular seat. All the other bells and whistles, fancy food and fancy stuff at the concession stand. Like the one gentleman called in and said, I just need a hot dog and a box of popcorn and I'm good to go.
Yeah. Well, you know, AMC Prime, they have the recliner chairs with the subwoofers that are integrated into them. So it really gives you the rumbling effect. They have the Dolby Atmos sound technology, JBL speakers. The high def projection that you talked about, that's the 3D really pops if you're into that. So they really have spent a lot of money on those Prime screens. So, but you're going to pay a Prime rate
exactly.
to see it at those theaters. As similarly with Cinemark XD, these are, you know, the huge wall-to-wall screens, wraparound sound, the seating is comfortable, and you know they have the state-of-the-art kinds of JBL sound system as well. The digital sound, they have something. The digital image are delivered by a Doremi server and a Barco digital projector, which all just means they're trying to make it sound as impressive as possible. But it does look good up on the big screen. But the Cinetopia complex is having to compete with all of these as well, and are trying to create an upscale experience. And they have movie parlors with what are called cuddle couches, which may turn out to be,
you need a lot of security.
Yeah.
Who knows?
Yeah.
That, you know, can lie down with your date and whatever. And
can rent blankets.
Mm-hmm. Right. And they also have, these giant screens that we talked about, the 80-foot screens with 4K projection. As I said before, that's four times the pixel you get on a typical high-def TV. They have the Coliseum seating. The big house has about 500 seats. And if you want to have that communal experience, why, boy, that delivers big time with the communal experience. And also leg room, you have leg room at home, but oftentimes in the older theaters, the leg room leaves a little something to be desired. 128 channels of Dolby sound. The beautiful food options. They have a restaurant there called Vinotopia, which is a farm-to-table restaurant. And they have images that play up on the screens there at the bar. And they have an outdoor patio, lounge, wine tasting room. They're really going all out to try to get you off the couch and out into theaters. And but again, you're going to pay for it. Is it worth it? We do have somebody that's called in and wants to join in on the conversation. So we welcome in Paul. Hi, Paul.
Hi. You know, my problem is just at the climax of the film, here comes the young person with my bill, wanting my
yes.
credit card. Sign mm-hmm. here. Put a tip. They do that with everybody at once. You may as well just destroy the last 10 minutes of the film. And you can't wait afterwards because then you can never get out of there.
That's an excellent point.
Yeah, that irritates me about a lot of the food service. At Alamo Drafthouse, I'll give them credit for this. The way they have it set up, the servers are low enough when they come to do your ticket. They just kind of slip it up onto the table
up.
And they don't bother you.
Yeah.
But a lot of the places, they do. You know, I think what they're doing with a lot of these theaters is, like, on some level, they're trying to recreate what you have at home with the comfy seating and the nice snacks and all that. And then they're trying to give you something you can't get at home, like the enormous three-story screens and the super digital sound and all that. So trying to get that combination in there. And it's, you know, they always go bigger. They always go more luxurious. They're always trying to get you just to – and then they've been doing this since the 50s, trying to get you out of the house and coming to get an experience you can't get anywhere else. But I'm with Mike. As long as it's comfortable and the quality's good, I'm mostly there for the social experience. You know, and some things benefit from a big screen and all the bells and whistles, but I don't need 3D. I don't need overpriced fancy food. You know, just going to the movies is enough on its own, really.
When you go to the movies, Paul, most of the time, do you go to a theater that has the food service?
No, I frankly don't, but that's because the kind of movies that I enjoy are at the Tivoli or the Glenwood Arts, and I don't go for the theater. I go for the film.
Well, that's interesting.
And I'm an older demographic, and so I probably, you know, your Godzilla and X-Men movies, it's not my thing.
Hey, thanks, Paul. Appreciate your call. I want to thank my fellow film critics, Lloyd Lockerbie and Mike Smith. And next Monday, tune in for a special program, Innovation Hub. They'll explore what was in place that helped foster the creativity and originality of the Beatles. Central Standard will return on Tuesday. Stick around for Up to Date following us next. Our show today was produced by Matthew Long Middleton and Sylvia Maria Gross. Our announcer is Linda Scher. I'm Russ Simmons. This is Central Standard on KCUR. Enjoy your weekend and your Memorial Day.